Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our weekly Hoops HD report,
Woohoo!
recording live here a couple hours early because of some other sport on the evening of Monday, January 10th. Actually, recording early, I believe it's because we all wanted to get off the call to watch the Pine Bluff at Prairie View game. Is that correct?
I am more interested in that than I am the football game.
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up top here by David Dorman and John Tytel. Down below me, David Griggs. Joining us back again from bracketeer.org is Rocco Miller. We are here to discuss a clean-shaven Rocco Miller. How about that?
Oh, man, yeah.
he's ready for the football game, I'll tell you. But we're here to discuss anything and everything going on among the all the major conferences, all the multi-bid conferences here in college basketball. We've got a fair amount to get to, actually, because Rocco, I think that the number of cancellations actually maybe were down this week from the week before. And was I right? It kind of felt like it, at least.
Yeah, it seems to be trending that way, that's for sure. You know, it's just some onesie twosies the last couple days, which is a good sign. We're actually seeing a lot more games getting rescheduled than canceled or postponed. So I think we're trending in the right direction. I think if we go back to our last December podcast, I was hopeful that that could be the case, as you see the trend of this variant in other countries before us start to see the kind of rapid slowdown after the peak. Plus, you know, a lot of this is weather based, and some bad weather over the holidays created a 10-day setback or so. Maybe, hopefully, that's all it is, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, yeah. Go ahead, Greg.
So. Well, isn't part of it, I was hoping, or at least, well, thinking, maybe hoping, if that's the right word, that it was going to be kind of like a gasoline fire, that it was going to burn big and burn hot, but burn really, really fast. And I hope that we're sort of, it's burned itself out quickly. My idea was that if you become infected, it should be looked at as a personal failure, and as punishment, you should be forced to play. Because if that were the policy, we wouldn't have any cancellations.
Okay. We're not
good luck,
doing
good
that.
Luck finding referees to do
I'm
that.
Just glad the buzzer isn't working.
Yeah, I'll try to get the buzzer. I missed that one. But let's go ahead and start the we do have the buzzer back. I completely blew that one. Let's go right to standings here. And Tytel, I guess we should start with who's going to win Alabama, Georgia coming up in an hour here. Although everyone should be, I've already watched the game by the time they watch our podcast, probably. But let's start in the SEC, seriously.
I do not think people make a lot of money betting against Nick Saban, so I'll take the Tide and the points, please.
But seriously, I do have the SEC up here on the screen. I figured it was a good enough place to start tonight, given that. And I guess the probably the most notable game was that LSU-Tennessee game. And I guess Griggs, let me start with you on this game here. I thought it was a, you know, I thought for a minute that LSU was going to blow it late, but very yeah. impressive performance by LSU.
It was. It was a big, I mean, it was a notable win, not that they didn't already have any, but to me, it just sort of underlines, I was already impressed with LSU, but for some reason after this game, you start to look at them and their overall body of work, and you're like, holy crap, this is a team that's as good as anyone in the conference. I see you about to pull them up here, but like the one thing, and it is the one and only thing, is that, and I realize that this is a very Griggs thing to say, in order for me to anoint them a one seed, they're going to have to win some more true road games. They've only played in two, and they've won one of them. Now, they certainly have opportunities. They got Florida. They got Alabama. They go back to Tennessee. They go to A&M. They go to Kentucky. They don't need to win all of those, but, like, I think they need to win half of them at least before I'm ready to say, okay, this is a team that's two line or higher.
Yeah, and right there, Dorman, I pulled up Auburn as well. You know, talk about two-line or higher. I think we had them as a one seed when we did our bracket rundown. And look at some of those metrics, at least the resume metrics, all have them as a one seed. How about the Tigers?
I'm all about the Tigers. I'm on board. This team is playing great basketball, and it's time to start considering Auburn as a national title contender. Bruce Pearl's done a great job. The team is playing real well. between Jabari Smith, KD Johnson, and Wendell Green Jr., they got three guys that can score. They got guys off the bench that play defense and rebound really well. I like the way this team's playing. I love the way they pressure the ball. Their defense has been great. Auburn is as good as any is playing anyone as good as anyone in this country, maybe besides Baylor.
They may be as good as anyone to play in the country. Rocco, on the left there, I pulled up a team that is has a real good chance to win a national championship in another sport tonight. But what happened at Missouri with the Crimson Tide this weekend?
Yeah, it was a strange game, to say the least. I know, you know, their big man, Betty Ocko, I think he went down pretty early. That I don't know if that shook up the team, but he only played 8 minutes. And Missouri, you know, the fact that they were even in the game 10 minutes in surprised me. But I guess credit to Missouri. Kobe Brown played the best game he's had probably of his whole career. He went for 30, seven for 10 from the field, 10 free throws, 13 rebounds. I mean, he was just a man amongst boys against Alabama, who just plays a lot of positionless basketball. Betty Ocko going down was a huge factor because it gave Missouri control of the paint. But yeah, I mean, Alabama completely outclasses them talent wise. And the other interesting thing about the game too, is about 3 days before the game happened, we thought it was going to be called off, because Missouri was still paused. They came off pause. They must've known their situation better than anybody else. Of course they did. And then the game actually does get played. So I think Alabama went from a standpoint of trying to find a non-conference game. I know they were talking to Colorado State, for example, to now having to prepare for Missouri again. So just some weird dynamics with the whole game even getting played. But in general, it shouldn't matter what time they're playing or when. Like, they should be a lot better than Mizzou. It is a big stunner regardless, but just a very kind of weird game, and Missouri took advantage.
Yeah, and Alabama now gets their next game is presumably going to be against Auburn. So, you know.
It is, big one.
Iron Bowl. Huge one coming up tomorrow. So they got to bounce back and bounce back quickly.
Yeah, and I think they should be ready for that. I mean, nobody prepares as well as these guys in terms of opposition, besides this Missouri situation, of course. But like, you know, they're a super elite team, talent-wise, coaching staff-wise, and this certainly woke them up. So I would expect a really good performance in the Iron Bowl.
In the Iron Basketball. Yeah. A question for you guys. I'm just kind of interested to hear your opinion on this take. Nate Oates, a fantastic coach. I think he does a great job preparing his team for opponents and as a bench coach. But one of the challenges of, say, a tournament situation is that you don't really have time to prepare for your opponent because right. You don't know who it's really going to be. And teams that really play to their strengths tend to do better in tournaments than teams that go in depth and prepare and X's and O's and schematics for another team. Is this a sign that we might see Bama struggle in March in a tournament setting, or am I just overthinking it?
I think time will tell, David. It could be. I think in this Alabama situation, they had a guy go down during the game, adjust on the fly. I think in a tournament situation, you've got three teams to prepare for, but yeah, you should be in a situation where your team's just good enough to go out and be better than the other team, and you got to focus on yourself. Spend probably 80% of your time focused on yourself.
That's one of the big differences between tournament play and regular season play.
And they should have at least been partially prepared for Missouri. It was the team on their schedule for this weekend, you know?
Yeah.
right. That's a great question, a great point David brings up. I also think Alabama was caught ahead looking to Auburn this week. They knew that game was coming up. They thought they'd walk into Mizzou and blow the doors off and get out of there with a 20-point win. Mizzou was ready in game, and Alabama looked like they were getting ready for Auburn.
That could be the case, too. Absolutely. Yeah. Tytel, one of the teams I pulled up on the right here, let's move more towards the bubble in the SEC, a team that we put in the field when we did our bracket rundown last week, and a team that I think I was one of the few people that liked heading into the season. What about Uncle Buzz's team there at A&M?
First, I got to call out David. If you don't think Nate Oates can coach in March, I refer you to 4 years ago when he blew the doors off my Arizona Wildcats. Secondly, Texas A&M. Uncle Buzz, amazing. 8-10 last year. He's been tearing it up this year. 13-2 only a pair of neutral site losses to Wisconsin and TCU. They're combined 23-4, two solid losses. They're not getting it done at the free throw line. Bottom 15 in the nation, 63%. They're getting it done outside. Top 15 in the nation, almost 39% behind the arc. Very favorable conference schedule this year. Auburn, Kentucky, Alabama, Tennessee, once each. They don't have to do home and home with any of those big-time SEC teams. And point guard Marcus Williams, he transfers in from Wyoming. He's a Texas native. He's been great during their six-game winning streak. 12 points, 5 assists, 3 steals a game. They're outside the bubble today. Call me in a week. That could change quickly.
And that's my question to you is, you say they have a favorable schedule. Maybe that's almost a disfavor to them, though, Tytel, because they did not get the key non-conference win either. I mean, they got LSU twice and a road trip at Auburn. They got to find a way to get that marquee win, don't they?
It would help. And if they lose to teams like Missouri or Georgia, they're going to be blowing it, obviously. But I think that by having to not worry about a team like Auburn, who, as we said, as Doran said, is one of the best teams in the nation, I don't want to play them twice because I don't think I can beat them even once.
Well, you do have to play at Tennessee. You do have to play at Auburn. You do have to play at Alabama. So that may be the drawback, too. You got all those teams on the road. But maybe it's also a benefit, though, because if you pick up one of those wins, you've got that marquee note on your resume. Let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule, maybe more so than last week. I think we have a little bit more faith in most of these games going ahead, as Rocco mentioned at the top of the show. The big game, obviously, is Auburn and Alabama tomorrow night, although I don't think Alabama fans are quite thinking about that game right now as we record this for some reason. I guess Tennessee at Kentucky is a big one on Saturday.
That one's going to be fun. Kentucky, not quite up to their ceiling yet, or not quite as good as we thought they would, but still very, very good at home. And that's kind of a bounce back challenge for Tennessee. But this is kind of a big week for Alabama. They got the football game tonight. They have Auburn at home tomorrow, and they have a road challenge. That is a hard game to win. And I think that by the end of the week, we're going to know, at least I'm going to have a better idea just how good is this Alabama team.
That's fair.
But
go ahead.
Can I just bring up one game coming up Wednesday, LSU at Florida? To all the Gators out there, your season is on life support. You better wake up and win this big game against LSU Wednesday, or you're in trouble.
I absolutely agree with that. I don't know that they can win the game. I don't think they're good enough to win the game. But if they do, it changes a season that's going downwards into a season that's going upwards. I agree with you completely there, at least. Let's jump over. We've got a lot more conferences to head to. Let's head to a conference that I put together a bracket this morning. 10 teams in this conference, one of which is ineligible. I still have 8 teams in my field as of this morning over here in the Big 12. And Rocco, maybe we start with the number one team in the nation, Baylor, who just continues to roll, picking up wins over Oklahoma and a win at TCU this week.
Yeah, the TCU game got a little interesting. They were down at half, I think by 6, and turned on the Jets. First 10 minutes of the half, went on they outscored TCU by 13 to build a 7-point lead, and then basically cruised to a 12-point win. A lot of people were going nuts at halftime that TCU might have the goods. Maybe Baylor's not as good as we thought. They quelled all that. It reminded me a lot of that road game they played just a month ago in Eugene against Oregon. They struggled in that for a while, just kind of a natural, true road game where, you know, the other team's fired up and Baylor's going to have a bullseye on their back everywhere they go, in the Big 12 and outside of the Big 12. And, they're starting to get comfortable with that. It looked like in the second half, you know, they have mixed in the phenoms, as I call them, Jeremy Sohan and Kendall Brown, of course, both freshmen, but they have so much experience when you look at Mayer and Flagler and Akinjo and Flo Thamba and JTT. So Baylor's just got the goods across the board. I don't think they'll go unscathed in this league, but I mean, it's hard to see them lose more than like 3 or 4 games all year.
It's just such a killer schedule this in this Big 12. As you mentioned, I think if Oklahoma State was postseason eligible, there might be 9 teams in as of today in this out of 10 teams in this field. But Griggs, you had a comment.
It's just the stupid run that Baylor's on. You know, 1920, we didn't have an NCAA tournament, but they were in the hunt for the one seed. I don't remember what their exact record was, but I don't think they had more than 3 or 4 losses. Right. They had one loss a year ago. They won it all. They are undefeated this year, and they are putting up You know, they've won over their last 3 years over 96% of their games or something like that. And it's just been against a killer schedule, both in conference and out of conference. This might be one of the best runs of our lifetime, as far as how good they've been the last 3 years.
Well, they got a lot ahead of them in Titel, including in 2 weeks, they've got a road trip to West Virginia and Oklahoma. The Sooners, after the loss at Baylor, did bounce back with a nice win over Iowa State this week.
You know how I like first-year coaches. Porter Moser is getting it done. Double-digit win over Iowa State, 12-3. Offense has been dominating in the paint, over 61% from two-point land, number two in the nation. Brutal schedule this month. Road trip to Texas and TCU this week. Host Kansas and Baylor back-to-back next week. Travel to West Virginia for a conference game. And then for the Big 12 SEC Challenge, they get, oh yeah, Auburn. Good luck. The transfer portal has been a huge help to them. So they get Duke transfer Jordan Goldwire. He's 21 of 23 from the free throw line this year. They get Umoja Gibson from North Texas, leading the team with 39 makes from behind the arc. They get Tanner Groves, Eastern Washington, leading the conference, 59% from the field. I have them as a number 7 seed.
Yeah, this team obviously has chances for a lot of big wins, but somebody's got to take these losses in this conference. I personally think TCU and Kansas State are the teams that I'm looking at to get them, but there could be a team like Oklahoma that could fall apart, and there's a team like Oklahoma that could go springing up by picking up these wins. So, you know, it's definitely going to be a crazy Big 12 season. Speaking of big wins, though, Dorman, on the left there, I just pulled up Texas Tech. Talk about a heck of a week with only 7 players eligible to play, almost win at Iowa State, and then beat Kansas at home.
Incredible job. Exactly. This was their 10-day. The season is on the line here. People are saying they don't belong. We were debating whether they should be in the tournament last week on our show, and maybe the record was just gaudy beating up on junk, but that is not the case. Their 3 losses are Gonzaga, Iowa State, and Providence, 2 of the 3 on the road. No shame in any of that. They knocked off Kansas, like you said, Chad, with only 7 scholarship guys. Now they go into Baylor. If they could do knock off Kansas and Baylor in 4 days, I this is incredible.
Yeah,
I
mean, they're really good. One seed.
Even if they lose, they're really good. No, even if they lose this game, Texas Tech belongs. They're really good.
They're really good. They do need to beat somebody on the road. It doesn't necessarily have to be Baylor, but like when they go to Kansas State, when they go to TCU, when they go to Oklahoma State, not that those are easy, but I think that if they do not get at least 2 true road wins, they're not going to get in.
Yeah, that's fair, but I think there are 2 true road wins to be had. Maybe not more than 2, but okay, 2 true road wins to be had at this conference. there's the upcoming schedule. You could just circle pretty much every single game on this calendar here. Just as a point of reference, tomorrow night's Iowa State at Kansas game, given what we expect out of Iowa State this season, that game is only going to be on ESPN+. It's not even going to be on national TV, and it's a battle between 2 ranked teams. That's just how insane this league is. There's no TV channel available for it.
They could move it.
I don't know. Talk to your folks over at ESPN, but as of right now,
I intend to.
The Baylor TCU game wasn't on TV on Saturday.
Yeah, you're right. It wasn't.
Let's move over to the Big East Conference. And Tytel, let me start with you here. You got a chance to see Marquette, the suddenly red hot Marquette team that blew out Providence and then went on the road to Georgetown and blew out the Hoyas as well.
I was not expecting much even after the Providence game because they started 0-3 in conference play. But when you win 2 conference games by a combined 60 points, I don't care who you are, like, you impress the heck out of me. They host DePaul Tuesday, then a brutal 7-game stretch. Top 50 teams, 7 in a row over the next 4 weeks. If Shaka Smart can survive that gauntlet, the good news is he finishes up with 5 of 6 games against teams outside the top 85. So rough 4 weeks now, better 4 weeks later. They also have one of the youngest teams in the nation. The good news is they've already been battle tested. 11 games against top 100 teams. So I put them in the bracket this week as an 11 seed.
All right. The team that they beat, Rocco, this week was the Providence Friars, but I tell you, every time I look at this Providence resume, it's hard for me to not say there's any holes in it, including the you know, I think it's a kind of a situation. They back on November 15th, they won at Wisconsin. We didn't pay that much attention to it, but Providence now has despite the loss, has an amazing resume, do they not?
I mean, they do. And, you know, some of it's been luck, right? Because no Johnny Davis in the Wisconsin game.
Right.
UConn missed Sonogo in the win there. But not Providence's fault. And, you know, they've played at a high level. And, I mean, their metrics are a little screwed up because they got blasted by Marquette so badly. They also got beat pretty bad by Virginia at a neutral. So they're still sitting at 50 in KenPom. But in general, like, you look at all the wins, there's 7 or 8 in the top 100. And you got 2 huge ones on the road with UConn and Wisconsin. They're totally fine in terms of selection. It'll be really interesting to see, you know, we have a lot of Big East games to go, but if it happened right now, we were in the committee room or just a wallflower in the committee room, it would be interesting to see how they would seed them, because if last year's any indication, this would remind me a lot of Missouri, who had an awesome resume with a lot of big wins, but still got slapped with a 9 seed because their metrics were screwed up because they got blown out in their losses. If the committee's going to continue to trend that way, Providence might not like their seed.
Yeah, an interesting mix of the metrics here in Providence. You look at those resume-based metrics like the KPI and the SOR, has them as a 2 seed, as an 8. If you look at KenPom, they're number 50. They're a bubble team.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a real, real, you know, I think those numbers will come closer together as we go through the season.
Yeah.
It's real interesting at this point.
Yeah.
Dorman, on the left there, I pulled up Seton Hall. Probably one of the best games I've seen all season this weekend. Their overtime win over UConn.
You stole my thunder, Chad. I completely agree. I hope everyone saw it. It was a great game. Came right down to the end, even got some overtime. Seton Hall's really impressed me. They have a sophomore from Brooklyn, Kadari Richmond, and he had a coming out party Saturday against the Huskies of UConn. He had 25 of his 27 in the second half, and they needed every last point of him. You put him, if Kadari Richmond's going to play that well, with Bryce Aiken, who is the big shot maker and taker for Seton Hall, and you put Jared Roden, who's scored 1,000 points or more already in his Seton Hall career, look out. This team has 3 big-time players, big-time scorers. I love the way Kevin Willard has his team ready to go. I don't think he gets enough credit for getting out as much talent as he does from the 3 and 4 stars, like a Cooley does in Providence, but Seton Hall has all the makings to be a second week tournament team.
I think they do. I think Griggs, maybe one other team worth a brief mention here is Xavier. They picked up a nice road win at Butler. Are you a believer in the Xavier team?
I am. Into what degree? I definitely think they're a team that's going to be in the top half of the bracket. I think that they could contend for a protected seed. I'm not ready to pencil them into the second weekend, but yeah, this is a really good team. Oklahoma State, not exactly easy to do. We're reasonably competitive. You know, they're 2 losses, both away from home, against teams that are ranked really high.
Yeah, and we're going to get their second game with Villanova early in the season. Very weird that they get both Villanova games this early in the season, but as of right now, at least scheduled for coming up on Wednesday, is their home game against Villanova. It's been a great rivalry over the last few years, but I think Villanova has pretty much dominated it, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if you'd call it a rivalry. I don't know how much heat there is there. It's definitely been a showcase series.
It seems for several years in a row, these were the top 2 teams in the conference, maybe last year.
Yeah. It's certainly starting to get on Xavier's nerves that they can't seem to beat them very often, but it's hard to beat Villanova. I mean, I know that that's a hot take. All you guys are floored by that statement, but it's hard to beat Villanova.
A couple other notable games, assuming they happen, include Saturday's UConn Providence and Seton Hall Marquette games. There's a couple others to definitely circle.
Yeah. Is DePaul done? We were so excited when they were 9-1. I was.
Too much one-on-one. Yeah, too much one-on-one. I mean, they don't. Yeah. They can't sustain that through 40 minutes against these organized basketball teams.
We not tell the same story about Chipotle every year? Do we not? I mean, it seems every year they get off to this great start, and then they get to Biggie's play, and that's the end of it.
And when you're a top 50 team that's playing a bunch of top 40 teams, you're just not going to win very often.
Yeah, I mean, Freeman Liberty is unbelievable, but once you double him and make somebody else beat, they start to run into problems.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of problems.
How about speaking of the Big Ten Conference, Tytel, where Michigan State picks up I guess they only played once this week, right? The game against Nebraska. They didn't get a game in over the weekend. But how about the Spartans? Are you a believer in them? Because I did a bracket today, and I put them as a one seed.
I only have them as a three, but I'm a believer in their resume because it's amazing. 7 of 13 wins against top 100 teams, only 2 losses in neutral site games to a couple of teams named Kansas and Baylor. So last year, Coach Izzo's team was below average from behind the arc, 32%. This year, only 39%, but now they're top 10 in the nation. It's amazing how 1 year can make such a big difference. 2 winnable home games this week, Minnesota and Northwestern, then a brutal 3-game stretch at Wisconsin, at Illinois, and hosting Michigan, who's not the Michigan of last year, but is still the in-state rival. And it's hard to say who's the biggest X factor on the team. If I have to pick somebody, I'll go with center Marcus Bingham Jr. Past 2 years, 4 points, 4 boards a game, below average. This year, as a senior, he made the leap, 11 points, 8 boards, 3 blocks a game. He's really getting it done on both ends of the court.
I love that profile. Connecticut, really good. We talked about them a few minutes ago. But I one of the things that's impressive, that win at Minnesota and at Northwestern, those are 2 home court heroes where they may not be top 25 teams, but it is hard to win there, and especially Minnesota. That is a great profile.
Well, talk about great profiles, Rocco. When I look at Wisconsin's collection of wins, I'm not certain that anybody other than Baylor or the entire nation has a better collection of wins. I know they've got a couple losses, but those road and neutral tier one and tier two wins with 8 of them already.
Yeah, Chad, and I think you got to start with Wisconsin by talking about how incredible their week was. Monday night they win at Purdue, which just totally shot their profile through the roof. Then they followed it up with a big home win over Iowa in a showdown between Johnny Davis and Keegan Murray, 2 of the breakout players of the year. And then a tough road win last night at Maryland. So 3 in a week with 2 on the road. I mean, that is a sign of a very good team, regardless of any other elements. Then you go back to the profile and you look at the Providence home loss, which did not have Johnny Davis. And so you're really just looking at a road loss in Columbus, which is incredibly easy to excuse. You could see them as high as you want based on all that.
I did this morning when I put together a bracket. Griggs, I know last week, thought they were a one seed. I laughed at him. And I think that when I looked closer and closer to this profile today and last night, I just can't fault this profile anyway.
No, I love that win at Purdue. There's huge. One that's better, but it's not by a team that's within reach of a one seed. We'll get to that here shortly.
Before we get there, also a team with a good week, Dorman. How about the Indiana Hoosiers on the left there with a couple of wins?
They needed it, and they got them. So that was big. But now they go to Iowa later this week, and they got it back the good week they had last week with a road win at Iowa. Indiana safely in the field in my bracket, but they don't have a lot of room for error here. They're picking up the new coach's system, and they're starting to really play good, better offense, team offense, work the ball around. Defensively, they're big and athletic, and they really have an opportunity coming up in Iowa, then an easier game in Nebraska, but then Purdue and Michigan at home, those are going to be huge.
And there's something huge missing from the Indiana profile, Griggs. I know you can tell us what it is.
Well, yes, you know what I'm going to say. 0-3 in true road games, just 1 win away from home, and it was a neutral floor win against a very piss-poor Notre Dame team. I do think that they'll win some road games, but if they can't get it done at Nebraska and at Maryland and at Northwestern, and, like, I think they need at least those 3. Otherwise, you're just going to look at them and say, well, yeah, they're good enough to beat good teams at home, but that in and of itself is not enough. Yeah, and they have to at least beat the non-tournament teams on the road.
They blew the game.
Or Iowa.
The game at Penn State, the game at Syracuse.
Yeah.
They needed
these
those
are not
wins,
tournament
so they couldn't
teams.
Get them.
And again, they were close games, but Penn State and Syracuse are not tournament teams. They have to beat the, there's three non-tournament teams on their schedule, and I think they need all three of those road wins. Now, to David's point, yeah, if they win at Iowa, holy crap, then suddenly they're looking much better.
Yeah, Iowa bubble-ish team right now as well, but
yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
It's hard to win at Iowa.
That makes it a lot better. There's the upcoming schedule. Some interesting games, I guess, ahead. The Ohio State-Wisconsin game, the Indiana-Iowa game that we mentioned, assuming we can get these games in. Iowa at Minnesota, Purdue at Illinois. Actually, circle that Purdue-Illinois game next Monday. That's a huge one.
Illinois playing great right now.
Yeah, yeah. Illinois cracked the top 25 today. I think they should have been in a couple weeks ago, but they are back in the top 25 this week.
If that game goes off Tuesday, Purdue in Ann Arbor, Michigan is also on life support. Canceled. Really needed that Michigan State win over the weekend that got canceled. They need to beat Purdue if that game's a go.
I believe it's already off.
Michigan got taking they had to take a timeout after their visit to the rack, right, Chad?
Yeah, well, not only did Rutgers beat the Wolverines, but we just shut the whole program down. So
that was the end. He just pulled the plug after going to Iraq.
Let's jump over to let's go out west here real quick here to the Pac-12, where UCLA, USC, Arizona would love to see these teams start playing each other. They've tried about 300 times and they have not. They're just playing the bottom. You know, USC and UCLA both beat Cal this week. They got back on the court at least. But Tytel, is there a fourth team that we should start looking at that's maybe in fourth place on this list here?
No, but since the other three aren't playing, I think we should at least discuss Colorado. So they lost back-to-back games to start December, but good losses. UCLA and Tennessee, 6 wins in a row since then to be 11-3. They're outside the bubble, but it could change quickly because of their brutal schedule ahead if it actually happens. 3 games in 10 days featuring Arizona and USC and UCLA.
Oh!
What's interesting to me is
if they win those three, they'll be okay.
They might be inside the bubble. It's interesting to see how Tad Boyle has changed his big man's game, Jabari Walker, from last year to this year. So as a freshman, he shot better than 52% from behind the arc, almost 80% from the free throw line, but only averaged 8 points and 4 boards a game. As a sophomore, he changed his whole game. He's shooting poorly now, only 23% from behind the arc and 69% from the free throw line, but his output is up, 13 points and 8 boards a game. I still don't completely understand it, but he's changed his entire game.
At the end of the day, Rocco, maybe the Colorado-Arizona game on Thursday is the only game to watch this week at this conference.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I'm playing the long game with that. It's obviously very difficult to say right now in a vacuum, you know, which games are going to mean the most later. We know that the three superior teams are going to stay superior, I'm pretty sure. I mean, USC might end up being third because Arizona and UCLA have all the tools there to be elite. USC just needs to start playing some more games. But in general, I'm focused on Wazoo and Oregon. I know Wazoo slipped up a few times, even at Colorado last week, but two of those slip ups, Noah Williams didn't play. Noah Williams got COVIDed out of the Colorado game last week as well, but he came back for Utah. They're just a whole different team when he plays. I mean, there's no arguing that. And their metrics are still strong. So it's like, if they get a couple road wins here or there, they're going to be hanging around. Oregon, same boat. They're still a top 60 metric team. They're going to be a team that when the superior teams of the top three come to Eugene, they're going to have a really good shot of knocking them off more than probably any other team in the league. So I just think you can't stop sleeping on either Wazoo or Oregon, more so than Colorado and Stanford or Cal, because Colorado, Stanford, and Cal have deficiencies on the roster. Whereas when Wazoo and Oregon are full strength and under two really good coaches, you can't write them off.
Well, I'll tell you what. The next week for Oregon, tonight at Oregon State, huge rivalry game at UCLA, at USC, scheduled for this week. They can pick up 2 out of 3 wins here. We'll talk a lot different about Oregon next week. But go ahead, Griggs.
Well, one of the things about Wazoo is they have that bitter, bitter rivalry with Idaho. I mean, it's 7.7 miles.
Okay.
Idaho beat the Jackrabbits, by the way. We'll talk about that on Wednesday.
Dorman, let's stay out west for a minute with the West Coast Conference, a conference that right now is probably on track to get more teams into the tournament field than the Pac-12. with BYU and St. Mary's, an ugly dogfight type of, just an ugly game, I thought, it's late Saturday night. But BYU was the better team, I thought.
I agree. They hit a few more shots than St. Mary's down the stretch, and that was all they needed because neither team really shot the ball well. I still have four teams in this conference going to the tournament. That is more than the Pac-12. People were saying that San Francisco's loss to Loyola is going to hurt. No, that was a great job by San Francisco and Loyola to meet out, get that game played. It was played at a really high level. That was a fantastic game. I think it was a plus for both the winner and the loser there. I think San Francisco will be fine. And I'm still on the four-team West Coast train.
Yeah, Rocco, you were at that game, correct?
I was there, yes. It was amazing. I mean, just a cool atmosphere. Salt Lake Community College is also home of the G League Stars, which I learned while I was out there, which meant it was actually, despite it being at a community college, it was a 4,500-seat arena with great acoustics, great video boards. They did the lights out for the starting lineups. They had a great singer for the national anthem. So for the players, and besides not having a real crowd there, everything else seemed very professional. The court was nice. Everything was good. And I, you know, if we're going to be in the COVID era into another year or more, hopefully not, why not do more games at that place? Like,
yeah.
Because we've got so many great programs out here in the West. And then you look at the Central, like the Missouri Valley and maybe some middle of the pack Big Ten teams or even some middle of the pack Big 12. Like Salt Lake's an easy place for anybody to get to with the Delta hub. There's flights in and out pretty easy. These two schools had charter planes, so they were out of there right after the game. And so, yeah, I mean, think about it. Private Jesuit schools, big money. But it was cool for what it was, like hearing the players talk and the coaches yell out stuff and, you know, just the intimacy. You know, Ken Palm was there, Brian Hamilton from The Athletic, and the coaches, you know, spent a lot of time with me and the other media members. Just a really cool experience. Selfishly, I'd love to see that more often.
Yeah, me too. It was, and it was a good production. It was a good game in a unique venue. It almost had like an MTE or like an exempt tournament feel to it, even though it was just a one-off. It was fun to watch.
Yeah. Absolutely. What about a West Coast Missouri Valley Challenge coming up in the future?
I think they should do that because they had one for Mountain West in the Valley, and then that got canceled last minute 2 years ago. But the West Coast and Valley make a little more sense. 10 schools apiece. Obviously, you get some synergy there. It always comes down to Gonzaga with the WCC. They call all the shots. Let's not lie about that.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's going to be a 12-team Valley pretty soon. But for now, at least it's 10 teams.
Good call. We'll chop off the bottom two.
forget you, Evansville. Real quick.
I love you
interesting.
Guys.
Interesting week ahead here for BYU, especially if we get these two games in, coming off the St. Mary's win at the Zags at San Francisco. Huge week, in fact. If they just split those, I think even it says a lot about this BYU team.
Yeah.
St. Mary's has Pepperdine and Pacific. They better win both those games.
Yeah.
Tytel, over in the ACC as we head back east, a conference that we seem to do later and later in this show every week, I think, as the standings come up. We know that the Duke-Miami game, but beyond Duke, is North Carolina the second best team or Miami? I mean, where we go? Where do you want to go with the ACC after Duke? I mean, it's
hard to argue against Miami having beaten Duke, but I'll go with the Tar Heels. I already mentioned one team with a first-year coach in Oklahoma, so I'll do another one with Hubert Davis here. The good news for him is that as long as his team shoots better than 40% behind the arc, he's got a decent shot of making the NCAA tournament.
Last time he was there
as a player 30 years ago this year, he scored 21 in a 7-point loss to the Buckeyes in the Sweet 16 in 92. Now, had you asked me a week ago, I don't think anybody would have cared about their road game at Miami next week. Now it's looking like the winner might be the one seed in the ACC tournament somehow. And I got to give a shout out to Armando Bacot. Dawson Garcia has missed the past two games with a concussion. No Dawson, no problem for the Heels. Bacot averaging 25 points, 19 rebounds a game in his past two. I have them as a 9 seed right now.
Okay. Yeah. Here's my issue with North Carolina's profile. It's bad.
Well, where is I guess the question is, where is the win over a tournament team? Yeah. And the only one I see there is UNC Asheville, maybe as your Big South champion, Tytel.
Yeah.
It's not perfect. I agree. Like normally beating Virginia by 16 is not a tier three. This year it is. And obviously if they lose at Miami and lose at Wake later in the weeks ahead, then they're not going anywhere. They might slip off the bubble, but I'm telling you, like, I like the losses. They're all quality and mostly by single digits, except for the Kentucky blowout. I'm not giving up on this team just yet.
And I agree. There are really no bad losses here. Even Notre Dame, not awful.
There's no bad losses, but it's just there's nothing that pops on that resume.
Well, look at this here, Dorman. On the right there, I've got Miami. Interesting. They've got something that pops. But their net is still 80 compared to North Carolina's 34. But as Greg said, they've got multiple games that pop, I think.
Absolutely. Again, I've said it all along. If I'm in the committee and I'm on the selection committee, the one thing that matters to me are things that other teams in the country don't have. Not many teams are going to have a resume that says win at Duke. No. I don't know if anyone else will. That's why Miami, we talked about on this show, who was going to be able to beat Duke on their own home court. That was going to be the big one for the ACC. Miami said, forget that. We'll go to Duke and win. So they got to win at Duke on their resume. I don't think that's going to happen many more times this year. Miami, all of a sudden, who was not on our bracket last week and not in mine, all of a sudden is well on that bubble.
Yeah, it's. I think they're on the very much on the good side of the bubble. See, they just missed the top 25 in the polls. Obviously, pollsters is a lot of recency bias and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Rocco, is there anything you want to even anyone else to even look at in this conference besides these three? Are you still keeping an eye on Wake Forest, or are they off your board even at this point?
Oh no, I mean it's so early. There's probably way too many teams on my board still.
Okay. Like,
I kind of have the opposite problem, but. Notre Dame's won five in a row, and I know we wrote them off, or probably several wrote them off earlier in the year, but they do have wins over Kentucky and North Carolina now, both on their home court. But I was curious to see how they would do at Georgia Tech over the weekend. They went down there and eked it out late. And Notre Dame's a team that we talked about a lot in the preseason, so I've given them a little bit longer of a leash. I do think they have a good full roster when healthy to be a factor in this league. I also expect Virginia, you know, they've had a bunch of up and downs. You know, they got the two road wins at Syracuse and Clemson back to back and then clunked at North Carolina. Tough three game road trip there where they got two of the three. I think that's a good sign. And, you know, under Coach Bennett, they're probably going to just only get better week over week. So you can't write them off. I still think Wake's interesting. But yeah. And Florida State, like, who knows? Like they should be better on paper than what they are on the court so far. And I don't know when the light bulb is going to go on, but it could happen any week. I think they play Miami this week, which is going to be super fascinating.
Yeah. I'll tell you one other team that I'm kind of looking at, especially with the interesting week of trips to Virginia and a home game against Wake. A home game against Notre Dame is Va Tech 0-3 in conference, but their metrics, they're 37 net, they're top 35 in all the predictive metrics. This is a team that,
yeah,
with a few wins, the metrics may be enough to catapult them back into the discussion.
I was looking at them, Chad. I think it's all because they beat St. Bonaventure by like 50.
Right.
I think they just broke the computers.
That could be the case as well, though. A couple more conferences real quick here to go through. Griggs, let's jump over to the American, where Houston, despite being shorthanded, does beat both one at South Florida, gets a home win over Wichita State. They're still rolling, even with missing pieces.
They really are, and this is just a credit to. I am really impressed by the effort. Like, you want to talk about a team in a program that's dealt with adversity this year, losing 28 points a game and scoring through injuries, and still getting out there and playing well and overcoming that. I mean, it's just a testament to Kelvin Sampson and really to everyone at Houston. Now, I don't think they're good enough to get back to the Final Four, and it's a shame that they lost so much talent. But when you look at the schedule and you look at the way they're playing, I don't see many losses here.
Yeah, it's tough to see the losses, other than maybe Rocco, I'd like to get your take on the team I pulled up on there on the right there, Memphis. It's just, you know, three wins in a row now after we were ready to write them off. They do have the Alabama win. I don't know what to do with this team, because we know they've got talent. We know they do not have coaching. So what do you do?
Yeah, well, I think the committee knows all that stuff too. You know, part of the responsibility these days is to actually watch the games throughout the year. They each have a territory they're assigned, so whoever on the committee is assigned to Memphis probably has a lot of stories to tell inside the room once we get to March. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But one of the things on the court, you know, in that Cincinnati game is, you know, well documented. Imani Bates, you know, the 17-year-old, all everything, decides to come there. Really struggled in their losses, attitude issues, locker room issues. I thought in the last like two games, the Cincinnati win and even the Tulsa win, he's starting to show a lot of signs of maturity, taking better shots, you know, finding his teammates. Seems like, you know, attitude wise, just from the body language, things are starting to flow a little better there too. So that's an encouraging sign for the future. I think that was a big part of their problem in the 4-game losing streak. I think as you look forward, you know, if they stay kind of in this area and they win the majority of the games they're supposed to, they'll be okay. Like, I think right now they might be like a last four in type of team, but they could improve on that. And they obviously have the talent to hang with Houston or maybe beat Houston later in the year. And that could make things really interesting.
Yeah, I had your dip bracket this morning, as I mentioned earlier. I had Memphis as my last team in, and it was.
Yeah, that's, I think, what I have too.
It's tough because there's so many reasons to hate them. There's so many reasons to love them.
So why not put them on TV in Dayton, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Make some money off them. Yeah.
Titel, we got a second place tie between Memphis and Tulane, though. Should we be talking Tulane or no?
No, but there's not much else to talk about in this league. And okay. Even though they started 3-6, their first five losses were each by 5 points or less. So very excusable. Three of the past four have been wins. They're still under 500. Tough stretch ahead, three straight against top 75 teams. They got Wichita State, SMU, UCF, and they had their LSU transfer miss a game against Charleston in early December. His past four games, Jalen Cook, he's been rolling 20 points, three assists a game, only missed three free throws in that whole time. And if you try to double team Jalen Cook, then the other SEC transfer named Jalen he can pass to is Alabama transfer Jalen Forbes, who's all he's doing is scoring 15 points a game this year. I have them as about a 25 seed right now.
All right. Upcoming schedule here. Houston's got a road trip to Tulsa. The Memphis-UCF game coming up Wednesday night, if that's a go, is definitely the one very interesting
kind
game.
Kind of bubblicious there, isn't it?
A little bit bubblicious. UCF not that far off the board either. But let's jump over to the Mountain West, Dorman, and speak about this the San Diego State-Colorado State game. Your thoughts on what was the Colorado State's first loss of the season?
San Diego State was ready. They were pumped up for the game. Viejas was rocking. I believe Colorado State is one of the very few teams to go into Viejas. They went in there last year, albeit no fans, and actually knocked off San Diego State. And the Aztecs got their revenge on Saturday in a big way. They took control in the middle of that first half and never looked back. But as many of you know who watch the show, everyone's been singing the praises of Colorado State. That one loss will not get me off of them. I love this Ram team.
Yeah, it was not only a loss, it was a full out ass whipping, Griggs.
Yes,
yeah.
It was.
It's not easy to go to San Diego State and win. This is just one of those great venues in college basketball, what it's turned into. They really have a unique culture there. You kind of hate that the Mountain West is kind of buried on some channel 600 on most premium sports packages. Because it really should get more exposure. I love San Diego State. Wow. What a place.
Well, I'll tell you, if we go beyond these two teams, who both look like tournament teams now after that win, at least, Titel, should we start paying attention to Boise State?
I think so, and it's a weird situation why, I'll explain. So they started 3-4. They had a home loss to Bakersfield the day after Thanksgiving. They scored a whopping 39 points. I was ready to write them off, but they won 7 in a row. Haven't played in 2 weeks. They're scheduled to play at Nevada on Wednesday. Tune into Rocco. We'll see if it happens or not. Bottom 10 in the nation in free throw shooting, though, under 61%. That's definitely going to bite them in the butt at some point. The reason they're winning, I think it's a case of addition by subtraction. Not a coincidence. Their winning streak started the day after they dismissed Arizona transfer Devonair Dutrieve. Not a coincidence. The man who spilled in for him, freshman Tyson Dagenhart, he's been great in the role. 14 points a game in his past 7 games, 11 steals, only 5 turnovers. He's not a scared freshman. He's handling the ball well. They're outside the bubble, but 7 in a row is 7 in a row.
Real quick, Rocco, a team on the right here that got off to a great start of the season, at least, was among the undefeateds for a little while there. The Wyoming Cowboys, are we still keeping them under consideration? And how big is the San Diego State game coming up this week?
Yeah, so I don't know if the San Diego State game's still on. I think they just scratched that today.
Mind then. Let's go somewhere else. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. So hopefully Wyoming gets back soon. They haven't played since the Diamond Head Classic, as we know. So it's already going to be a 20-day layoff if they could get back by Saturday. But that was Saturday's a huge one, too, at Utah State. You know, we'll learn something there about both of those teams. It's our favorite front range versus Beehive State rivalry game. And then they got to turn around and play Nevada on Monday. So, you know, hopefully they get back and healthy and ready. I do think, you know, Graham EK is one of the best stories, and hopefully he's a household name by the end of the year. The guy is an unbelievable force and a heck of a find for Jeff Linder. I think this team is going to hang and fight all year long. I don't know exactly where they're going to finish because there's seven or eight really solid teams in this league. But just because you finish fifth or sixth doesn't mean you're that bad in this league, because I think all these teams are going to float between 50 and 100 in KenPom all the way until the end. I mean, they're that solid, and I think they've proven it.
Yeah. Well, there's the upcoming schedule. Rocco's already canceled a few games at us here, but Greg, sorry, yeah. Go ahead real quick here.
Well, yeah, to echo, I mean, there's a lot of decent teams in this league and a lot of solid teams, to use the same adjectives, but it's just not, there's just not quite enough that did enough to get inside the bubble. Or so in you order for teams to get there just isn't enough room. Somebody's going to have to run away from the conference in order to get themselves there.
Or they're just going to have to pick on Colorado State. You got to, maybe if a couple of these teams get the road win there, that could be the piece of gold that shoots their resume above sea level.
But there are some decent other road wins to have, games like teams like Fresno State, Utah State. You know, pick up road wins at those place types of places.
Those are great wins that matter.
Yeah, they better matter because it's hard to win there.
It very much so is. Especially, the travel in this league is crazy.
Yeah.
Rocco, let me stick with you for a second. Jump over to the Atlantic 10. And Davidson is the team that is suddenly in everybody's, showed up in everybody's projection as winning this conference. How good is this Davidson team?
Trying to figure that out. Because, like, you look back at the results through November and December, and you can't help but be really impressed. You know, I saw the San Francisco game was in the NBA arena. They played tough, lost by five. Of course, lost the New Mexico State game in the opener of the tourney. Been flawless since. You got the Alabama win, which just blew everybody out of the water. Davidson fans have to be huge Roll Tide fans from here. They must have been cringing over that Missouri game over the weekend. But probably cringing over their own game, too, because Rhode Island was up for most of the game. Davidson really had to rally to win that. And that would have been a tough home loss, although Rhode Island's better than most people think. They can't afford to lose at home. I think when you look at Davidson's road opportunities, their resume can only improve because they got some really good opportunities at VCU right around the corner. You also have an opportunity at Dayton on the last game of the year. They also get to play at Rhode Island, which should mean something. And, of course, at the Bonnies will be a big one, too. And I'd not say they have to win any or all of them. They just maybe need to pick off one or two to solidify their resume because right now they're in pretty good shape, I would say.
Is it good enough? The thing about the A-10 is that while no one other than Davidson is anywhere near the bubble right now, there's still some landmines. It's hard to win at VCU. I think it's going to be hard to win at Dayton. It's arguably hard to win at St. Bonaventure. And while we know that, when you lose a game like that on paper, unless you're really paying attention, it's probably going to look worse and hurt them more than what it probably should. How many strikes does Davidson have? And I'm asking our bracket gurus, Rocco and Tytel.
I think if they took more than one home loss, they would be in pretty big trouble. I think they can maybe afford one slip up at home against a top eight team in the A-10. Don't slip up at home against George Washington.
You're looking at other two games that qualify for that, the VCU and the St. Louis home games.
Those would be
split those and you win the rest is what you're saying.
Well, and then those four road games that I listed, if they get one or two of those, that starts to make up for that. So then they would buy themselves another slip up. So it's just a kind of give and take situation when you look at both sides of that.
Tytel, on the right there, I have the red hot VCU Rams. Again, kind of the question I've asked you the last few conferences. Time to start paying more attention to them.
Barely. I'll address the elephant in the room. Yes, David, I see that big, huge gap in the tier one on the left side. So just chill out for a second. They did start 3-4. They did lose at home to Wagner by 14 points, arguably inexcusable, but they have won 6 in a row. They're 9-4. They did lose. They've been doing it the last two games without senior big man Levi Stockard, who's been out with COVID protocols. I'm still going to wish him a happy early 23rd birthday on Tuesday. They host GW on Tuesday, big road game on Friday at the Bonnies. You're going to beat them with free throw shooting. They're bottom 15 in the nation, under 64% at the line, which is why they are losing a lot of games. They are great at defending the three-point line, 24% three-point percentage allowed, number one in the country. And the big reason for the winning streak has been the point guard, Adrian, a.k.a. Ace Baldwin. In June, he tore his Achilles tendon. I wasn't sure if he was going to miss the whole year. He missed 8 games. He's been back now. 10 points, 3 steals a game this year. He's averaged 7 assists a game this past 4. They're outside the bubble, but there's plenty of room to go up.
This is a team that I just feel like is better than what their resume indicates. I mean, while they didn't beat Baylor or Connecticut, they actually really competed in both those games. I don't know what the hell happened against Wagner, but at Vanderbilt, at Dayton, that's nothing to just ignore. I mean,
no respect for the Wagner Seahawks here. I'm very disappointed in
you. I love Wagner. I'll stand up for them.
I like them by NEC standards.
Well, one more team to quickly discuss here. Dorman, on the left here, I pulled up the Bill Akins, who got probably the best win of the maybe in the conference this week with that last-minute scheduled home game against Iona. It was a great game. It was a one-point win. You know, we were all ready to write off the Billikens when Perkins went out for the season before the year started. It's not an awful profile, and there's a few chances left here with the road trip to Davidson, for example, in a game against VCU on the schedule still.
It's not an awful profile at all. All the losses are explainable. They're going to go to – they have St. Bonaventure. They're going to go to Richmond. They're going to go to Rhode Island. First, they're going to Dayton this week. This team has opportunities. They're up and down. If they can hold serve at home and upset a few of these on the road, they're going to be in the discussion. I think this A-10 tournament come March is going to be fantastic because there's about 5 or 6 teams that are not going to be on the bubble but think they belong, and there's going to be some terrific basketball in March in this conference.
Everybody find that USA Network on your cable dials with NBC Sports Network having shut down. A-10 has moved over to USA Network if you're looking for those games.
There is something that we have to point out. Absolutely. Right. Tomorrow night, if you have plans, cancel them. Go home, find whatever channel St. Louis Dayton game is on. Get on Twitter and search for the hashtag ArchBaronCup and get something good to drink, because you will never be more entertained over the course of 2 hours than you will be during that. It's the greatest made-up rivalry ever. It is awesome.
Round one of the Arch Baron Cup tomorrow night, unless Rocco makes an announcement saying that's canceled, so keep an eye on his Twitter feed. As of right now, it looks like it's good to go, though, right, Rocco?
As far as I know, yeah.
Let's go ahead.
It's going to be a damn good game, too, even if they weren't rivals.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead. I'll try to get you the TV info before we can finish the podcast. Let's go ahead and jump down here, pull this off here. Run up to any final thoughts. And Dorman, let me start with you. Final thoughts.
Did we do all 10 conferences?
Believe so. Let's hope we're getting on the right side of this health issue and all the COVID protocols. And it seems like the schedule, like we discussed earlier, is there are much less cancellations and postponements. Let's hope college basketball is going to be full throttle from here on out, because we got some great conference races coming down. Then we're going to have a great conference tournament schedule right into the big tournament. So let's hope everyone, these teams can stay healthy. We get the games on the board, because a great season's about to unroll here.
Yeah, I think I agree with you completely. A quick note here, the Arch Baron Cup, as Greg's mentioned, CBS Sports Network tomorrow, Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern.
I'm telling you, so it is national TV. You do not want to miss this.
Tytel.
So I know we're still in early January, but I want to give a shout out to Keegan Murray for my final thoughts. Sophomore forward at Iowa, quietly putting up a season we haven't seen in a long time. 24.7 boards, 2 blocks per game. The only two players from a power conference team to do that in the past 3 decades, Donyell Marshall at UConn, we go back to 94. Kurt Thomas at TCU, we go back to 95. Keeping in mind that back then, TCU was actually a member of the Southwest Conference, which is so old that the league was disbanded after the 1996 season. And remember, Coach Fran McCaffrey, last year he had the National Player of the Year in Luka Garza. Can he really make it 2 years in a row with the National Player of the Year and, of course, become known as the best recruiter in the sport?
Okay, let's keep an eye on Iowa. Rocco.
Yeah, a couple of quick final thoughts. One, I know we've talked to Tytel quite a bit about his distaste for first year head coaches. I was wondering, with the transfer portal era, upon us, do we have to start calling coaches like Porter Mosier a different category if he's able to not only switch schools and become the Oklahoma head coach, but also bring, players with him or get players out of the portal that basically make up the nucleus of his new team? I mean, it's almost a little different than the old school first year head coach that are having to get recruits or try to save players. You can look at Chris Beard, right? Like, he basically just brought in a whole crop of college all-stars. I don't know. Do we have to look at that differently than the old traditional first year head coach data? Just something to ponder. And then my other final thought is Duke. I was at the Duke Ohio State game 2 months ago, or I guess it was. And, one of the things that stood out like a sore thumb in that game was how Duke had it the whole way. And then in those crucial possessions, nobody really wanted to step up and get organized. A lot of guys standing around expecting the other guy to take care of it. Even Boncaro, who is their all-star freshman, looks a little uncomfortable. We saw that situation happen again in the Miami game, frantically, actually, because Miami hurry up and got the lead with about 24 seconds left. But again, Duke had a couple cracks at it, and same exact thing as the Ohio State finish. Go back and watch the tape. A lot of guys just uncomfortable at the moment, didn't know what to do. So it's an interesting dynamic for a team that usually blows out or dominates the competition. What happens when they get in those situations? Duke's now 0-2 when put up against the wall like that. So that's just interesting to monitor. Probably something that will certainly come up in the tournament. And just a final thought there.
All right. Just on those first year head coaches, between 3 of them in the Big 12, all looking like some very solid teams, and his own Arizona Wildcats. Tytel's hated first year coaches may have to change after this season, but we'll see. but Griggs, you want to finish off the show?
Yes, I need the screen share, Chad.
Okay. I will try to.
It says you've disabled it.
Okay. There we go. Try that now.
Okay. Trying it now. Let me see. It's going to take a second. Okay, here we go.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, is it working? Okay, there it is. I believe. Okay, this is tomorrow night. This is what you will witness on CBS Sports. But before you watch this game, you must go to archbaroncup.com and read all about the made-up history of this rivalry. This is spectacular. They've got quotes here. As you see there, I've rocked every stage from – this is what CC DeVille had to say about the Arch Baron Cup and Mike Krzyzewski and whoever, Brian Bart. This is just hours of hilarious entertainment. This is one of my favorite things in all of college basketball. And what's kind of funny is that as it builds more and more fan bases, like both fan bases are starting to embrace this more and more. Is it going to get to the point to where it turns into an actual rivalry instead of just a fun made up one?
I think it's got a little more notoriety than the Hoops HD Wynwood Cup and Nokoe Wu Cup and all the other things that we've made up on this show.
Yeah, I don't know who built that thing, but it is hysterical. Archbaroncup.com.
Definitely check out the website, but check out the game, check out all the games. But on that note, I do want to thank everyone for joining us. We're just in time now to watch the college football game. But on behalf of John Tytel and David Dorman, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, not Racketeer.org, Bracketeer.org, and David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talking to you again real soon.